We hope no one would consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on NABBAclub.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker. And we believe it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I'm one of them too. I must have this thing. Theron S. spoke recently, and our friend Tinsley was there, and he came here the following Monday, and he said, you've got to get Theron S. here to speak. And boy, Theron S. showed up 5 minutes later, and we cut a deal. The rest is history. He's here. I hear he's got a pretty good sponsor. Theron, come up here, everybody. Everybody give him a big warm round of applause.
Hey, y'all. My name's Theron Smith, and I'm a grateful alcoholic. And it's really good to say that because it explains a lot to me. And besides, I always wanted a title. So, you know, I want to thank Tinsley, Tim, for allowing me to do this. And I'm glad Tim led it off with saying it's going to be from my point of view, because I don't know how much it could be, everything could be confirmed. Most of the ones that was out there with me, half of them are dead, and the other half probably don't know that I'm alive. So I can't get confirmation on a whole lot of this stuff. Other than the legal stuff, I've got a rat sheet to prove all that. You know, I'm up here to talk about what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like now. And, you know, I'm not going to use that format because the deal is I didn't know what I was like then, or I didn't have any understanding of it until I started this work. And, you know, that's why I am so grateful to have found Alcoholics Anonymous. My sobriety date is November 26, 2005. My beginning of my journey to find y'all happened on November 27, 2005, when my brother-in-law gave me a call, and I don't know if he just caught me at a real weak moment or if he called me from a different number, because back then I wasn't taking phone calls, especially from family members, because I was living or existing in one of my four places of residences scattered around the perimeter, because my belief was it's harder to hit a moving target. And this particular one was with a female whose occupation was a dancer to a pole, and I had just recently lost yet another job, so I was unemployed. I had recently just totaled the third vehicle in a 4-month period. And, again, he caught me at a weak moment or came in somehow to where I answered the phone. And he said, you want to do lunch? And I said, yeah, we can do that. So he picked me up and we went out to lunch, and pretty soon I started seeing things closing in around me. And that was probably November 27th was probably the first day that I can remember of having a real awareness of God, because my family had offered me help hundreds of times before. And I always said, you got it wrong. You don't understand. I got this. And this time, not only were they there, the few, But all of a sudden, through the door of the restaurant, came the guy that just, the family friend who had hired me, took a risk and hired me when I'd come out of my last stint in jail. Dear family friend, stuck his neck out, owned a company, took me in, trained me, and gave me a job, and I was able to perform for maybe a couple of years, and then I started really doing him wrong. Well, he showed up for this. Blew me away. Because they started in, and he says, Theron, listen, we believe, and I pulled my loaded finger out of my pocket, like I always did, and I was going to say, and he stopped me. He said, just stop right there. He said, I know what you've been doing, where you've been doing it, how much you've been doing, and how long you've been doing it for. Let me go ahead and tell you, I've got some outside issues other than alcohol, but all they were was to enable me to drink more alcohol. And I'll reveal more of that later. So anyway, I came out with my cocked and loaded finger, and he stopped me. He told me what it was, how long, how much, who. He said, I've had a private detective on you for the last month and a half. I holstered the finger. I was forced to listen. And he offered me that help that they'd offered time and time before, one more time. And I knew he was final this time. So I accepted help, went into a treatment center. I thought was a 30-day program. They don't offer a 30-day program. I find out later. And 13 months later, I leave that treatment program. But there, thank God, and again, I had some awareness of God showing up. Thank God, in this treatment center, there were two guys that brought a book study in. Thank God I was subjected to this book, the truth in this book, something that got me hooked up and explained all of my craziness for 50 years. You know, some people talk about the voices. I call it my noise. I mean, if there were voices, I wasn't even straight enough to understand them. It was just a noise. And I had that for all my 50 years. And I had a lot of questions. Because I'm an intelligent person. I ain't smart, but I'm intelligent. That's what I have been told. Again, that does not equate to smart. Not in my case. So, all that was asked of me, and I'm still on this fence, even though I came in this deal very much hopeless, because again, I'm 50 years old, and I have made a total shambles of my life. And I had no other place to go. I just had already done the jails. I've already done the institutions. The book tells me there's only one thing left, and that's the death. And you know what? For the last 10 years of my run, I was hoping on that. I was banking on that on a daily basis. I lived with the thought of suicide on a daily basis for the last 10 years out there. So, all that was asked of me was that, look there, bucko. You sitting there still thinking you got a few cards to play, and you still thinking you might be able to manage this, but you hadn't got any answers. All you got is questions. All you're doing is asking a bunch of questions. Why? Why do I think? Why do I do? Why? And he said, why don't you just start reading this book? And if you see yourself on any of these pages, you owe it to yourself to keep reading. If not, give the book away. And again, because I still got that loaded finger in my pocket, I'll take that challenge. Because I'm going to find a way to prove y'all wrong. I opened up the book and there's Theron on every page. I mean, I got a little sober and I was ready to sue Bill Wilson for writing my autobiography. So, Thank God, because that started the answer to all those questions. So when step one's done, I'm in this, what I call a treatment center. They inform me it's a mental institution. Okay. Done. Step two came to believe. I didn't have a problem with that. I believed in God since a child. But my deal was, I just didn't think God was too much out for fair, you know. And again, I'm wanting to sort of stay on this fence for a while, and so I'm starting to say, because I have those doubts in the back of my head, and I'm starting to say, you know what? All those God words on those steps, that might be my way out. And I said, you know what? I'm not sure about this God thing. I'd really love to give you all a try, but I'm not sure about this God thing. And they said, oh, you don't believe? Maybe not. Well, listen, Bucko, you said you've been to jail so many times. You've never prayed in jail? Hell yes, I did. Every time they shut the door, I prayed my butt off. Well, then you must believe, or at least have some belief. Okay. And then it said, restore me to sanity. I was out after that because, you know, I was, for most of my life, I just thought I was batshit crazy. And I'd label myself early on where I'm the black sheep. That was my label because that was a way out. Then it was like, okay, well, I'm just a little bit crazy. I'll take that. And then later on, just to shut them up, you might be an alcoholic. Well, all right, but I'm a damn good one. All right, that'll shut you up. I'll take it. So then it came to step three. Did the prayer, you know, not, although I'm still not knowing about this God thing. And, you know, for a long time I was so hung up on that word because I knew the book had told me I was to develop a personal relationship to a God of my own understanding. And I didn't know that because the only understanding of God I had was that childhood God. And that's the one I ran from for all these years because it didn't fit me. And I didn't think you could do a personal God or a God of your understanding. Because back in my church days, that God that I was hooked up with, I would have thought that would have considered blasphemy. So I'm working on that, but I'm still hung up on this God word. And I go into my home group, and I'm puking all over them about this God thing, this God thing. And this guy that had a lot of years, and he says, shut up, man, you're hung up on a name. You're hung up on a name. He says, I pray to Sky Chief. And I went, wow, Sky Chief, that's pretty cool. So I prayed to Sky Chief for a while. But that was the start. That was the start. So then I got to the fourth step, and this is the real deal. This is what, other than what I was reading in the book and seeing myself all on these pages, then I got to put pen to paper. And he asked me to go back as far as I can remember to what was blocking me off from God. And I had to go way back because I'd never attempted this work before. You know, I'm going to tell y'all, and I used not to ever mention this because I didn't want to sound boastful or anything. But when I've come in this deal, and I've got one white chip. And that's not to say that I'm any better of a drunk, less of a drunk, better of a drunk than anybody that's got enough white chips to tile a bathroom. And it's not to say that I haven't tried to quit before. I tried to quit thousands of times for a lot of years. I was just trying it away from the program. Since coming into the program, I haven't had to feel the need to drink or drug since then. So I only say that now because what we hear in the rooms is relapse is part of recovery. Well, I don't buy that because it doesn't apply to me. And I'm up here to supposedly give hope. You know, and I'm not going to be preaching that relapse is part of recovery. So, I start that work, and that's where now I can talk about what I was like. Because through that work, now I've got a little understanding of it. Because before that work, I couldn't have made any sense out of any of it. I'm the youngest of four. My siblings ain't like me. You know, I told y'all I've been dealing with this noise all my life. So, I go back and my earliest recollection is my parents were old when they got married. My mom waited on my dad for him to get back from the war, real noble stuff, you know. They got married late. They had kids late. I'm being the youngest of four. They had me even later. My first recollection is that I had an embarrassment or a shame about my parents being old. My parents were as old as my friend's grandparents. I didn't know any of my grandparents. They were all dead. So I had that. My father was an alcoholic. My mom was probably termed as a hard drinker. She drank a lot and so she could get as close as she could my dad's level. And she never could catch up with that, but she tried. He was a functioning alcoholic. God bless him. He worked every day in his life. He provided for us the best he could. But every day, somewhere between work and home, he had gotten his drunk on. By the time he pulled in the driveway, he was well lit. And every afternoon when my mom see that, boy, she'd say, okay, it's time for me to catch up to him. So, I couldn't, you know, then I had some embarrassment about my dad. I couldn't bring my friends home from school because never know how drunk my dad would be. He never could take us to Little League ball because he'd always be too drunk to drive by the time he pulled in the driveway. So I had this shame and embarrassment. My dad was not, he wasn't physically abusive. But what was going on in those four walls, there was just conflict. My mom and dad, they were, as she got closer to his level, they would argue till wee hours of every morning. And on the other side of those paper-thin walls at night, I'd hear my mom say, you know what, if it wasn't for the damn kids, I'd leave you. And I don't know how the siblings heard this, you know, by this time I discovered that what I suffer from, this disease I suffer from, is a disease of perception. So again, you know, siblings ain't like me. Apparently they didn't perceive things like me. And I understand that today. But when I'd hear that every night, what I was hearing was it's my fault. If it wasn't for me, they'd just be getting along. I'm sure of it. So now I get guilt. You know, when we put up a really good front for the community, the town, you would have thought we were the Leave It to Beaver family back there behind the white picket fence, you know. But it was anything but that behind those walls. So I'm already seeing this deception that we play. And every single Sunday, my mom and dad, they drug us little four chicklets to church. And every single Sunday morning, my dad taught a Sunday school class, and every single Sunday morning, my mom kept the nursery. And before I even knew what a hangover was, I'm thinking, damn, they got to be hurting. Because, I mean, they were up till 3 a.m. screaming, you know. They're all red-eyed and stuff, and I'm, you know, I've been up just as long as they have. And so, you know, and I'm hearing the preacher from the pulpit, and he's preaching down, you know, you do this, you go there, you do this, you go there. And I'm seeing my mom and dad, and they're just nodding, and all the people are nodding. And then we go home, the four little chicklets behind, and, you know, we'd have lunch, and by the time lunch was done, the bottles would come out. By 2 o'clock, it was on again. You know, and before I even knew what the word was, and I probably still can't spell it, I was seeing hypocrisy, you know, at a real early age. So I'm seeing we're putting up a front. So now, already, from just going back in time, I'm already starting to understand a little bit about what that noise has been all my life. And then, you know, because the siblings aren't perceiving things the way I am, I'm feeling, what's wrong with me? What's wrong with me? So, you know, then it goes, then I started, and again, you know, my dad being an alcoholic, and I'm sitting there, and I remember, I don't know, I was this tall. And I remember looking at the way my life was, and I'm saying, I will never drink that crap. And I meant it, man. Because it was causing me hell. My life was, causing turmoil. And I meant it. I said, I'll never drink that stuff, and I'll never be like my dad, and I'll never be drunk like him. And I meant it. And I held on as long as I could. And I don't remember when alcohol actually touched my lips. I know I was real young, because they used to keep a concoction in a mason jar. It's called it Rockin' Rye. And it was rye whiskey with rock candy in the bottom of it. You know what I'm saying? And they'd give it to us kids when we had a cough. Well, after discovering that, I coughed a lot as a child. But still, that was medicinal. You know, I was still saying, I'll never drink that crap. So I held on as long as I could. And at 13, because of all that noise, that shame, that embarrassment, that guilt, that cover-up, at 13, I steal a six-pack. You know, and the book also tells me to answer some of my questions on why I do the things I do. It says a real alcoholic will drink for one reason and one reason only: the effect it produces. I didn't drink for taste. I didn't drink for color. I didn't drink for the bouquet. I didn't drink for any of that. Because that six-pack I stole from my dad was calling Black Label. And it was warm. And I took that out in the woods. I'm a consequence drunk. You don't have to qualify the consequences that I've had, but that's my story. You don't have to lose the things, the total, the cars, you don't have to lose the wives, the jobs, and whatever, the houses. In my case, I lost all that time and time again. Through this work and through that recollection, I see where the insanity started. It started with my first episode. I'm a consequence drunk, and I'm drinking for one reason and one reason only. I take that Carling Black Label, warm, out in the woods, and I pop that top. Some people talk about their first drink experience was like heaven gates opening up. Rainbows and unicorns and whatever. Not my story. I turned that warm Black Label up, and it didn't stay down. I puked it all down my legs and into my shoes, and it was coming out of my nose. It wasn't a good experience at all. But being the good alcoholic that I am, I persevered through that first one. And I got the rest of them down. No unicorns, no rainbows. It's still dribbling out of my nose. But what happened to me on that spot in the woods was the noise got quiet. I had an effect was produced. And I knew right then and there, with it still coming out of my nose, I was going to be back to that spot. So I go home from that. I'm a consequence guy. My first episode, I got caught. Wasn't hard. I'm smelling like a brewery. I got puked all down my legs, into my shoes, and it's still coming out of my nose, and my dad's missing a six-pack. Wasn't hard. He catches me. He blisters my butt. And I remember, when I recall that, I remember, as that 13-year-old kid, I remember thinking, Theron, you're at a crossroads here, buddy. Let me see. You can either stop doing that and save your ass, literally, or you can run the risk of getting that effective produced again. No brainer. So before the welt's even gone down on my butt, I've got another six-pack of warm Black Label, taking it back out to those woods. And this time, they all stayed down. And this time, it worked again. The noise got quieted. So I'm drinking pretty much as often as a 13-year-old could. We're getting this butt blistered on a regular basis because I'm weighing it out every time. By 15, I'm drinking alcoholically. And, you know, through school, a lot of people talk about how they just didn't fit in. That's not my deal. I fit in anywhere I went. Because, again, the book explained to me that, you know, me with a lot of other people, I'm a chameleon. I could fit in with anybody. The problem was, I can't belong anywhere. I don't have the feeling of belonging anywhere. Because I just can't stay around long enough. Because I don't know who I am, but I'm worried about being found out who I am. You know, didn't make any sense. Didn't have much problem with the schoolwork, it came easy for me. So, I'm drinking alcoholically at 15. By the time I turn 16, and my driving career starts, I'm a blackout drinker also. So I start driving. Within the first 14 months of my driving career, I've already accrued 4 DUIs and another 3 arrest for alcohol-related offenses. And I'm still not seeing anything. I'm still doing this every time, you know. And all I know is, you know, those weren't enjoyable experiences. They were very costly. You know, I totaled a lot of cars, you know. They weren't pleasant. But each and every time I'm doing this weighing out deal, and it's stopping the noise. That's all I care about. It's just stopping the noise, and I'm just all right for a while. It doesn't matter if I just got out of jail. Shit, they keep letting me out. For now. That changed. So, you know, and I remember at 16 years old, every morning, with my head throbbing, my gut churning, and I'm going to the blinds, and I'm peeking out the blinds, looking in the driveway, see if the car's there. And man, there's not a good answer for that. If it isn't there, I don't know where to start looking for it. Because I never ended the night where I started the night. I never ended the night with who I started it with. So I'd be clueless on how to recapture it. If it was there, it's not much of a better answer. Did I drive it? Was it towed? Has it been sideswiped? Is there a dent in the hood? Is it a dent the size of a body? And every single morning, I'm going through that misery, and I'm swearing up and down, I'll not do this again. It's not worth it. And I meant it. Again, I meant it. By 2 o'clock, I'd sweated that hangover out, and I'm already planning on being the first one back at happy hour. And I start that all over again. So I'm a junior in high school, and I'm figuring I've got to get out of here because it's just time to leave. They're putting way too many demands on me. They're asking me these extreme things. They expect me to show up in the morning and stay till afternoon and stuff like that. And, I just don't have time for that. I'm drinking a lot already. So I graduated a year early and I get out of there. Well, I already know that, you know, I pretty much can't work for anybody because the way I like to drink. So I get right into college, and that's because they had a thing called the draft around that time. Seemed like a good thing to do. Nice place to hide. Went in there, and needless to say, I got behind, way behind on my work. And I went up to the freshman, and I said, man, you can't flunk me, you know, because I'm a deal maker already. I'm already a good scam artist already. So I'm working it with him. I said, dude, you just can't. And he goes, I'm not going to flunk you out. Really? Cool. All you got to do is make up all the work you've missed. Take the exam. If you pass, you pass. Cool. Oh, by the way, how much work have I missed? Like half a quarter. Oh, what an order. I can't go through it. And I had a buddy up, in class, and he was a Vietnam vet, and he goes, come here, you can do this. It's easy. And I said, what? And he said, just take you a couple of these. Black beauties. And if any of y'all don't know, it's an old pill form speed that was really good. And for a blackout drinker, there was the rainbow to be. So that was my start to the outside issues. And I thought it was a match made in heaven. It solves the blackout drinker's problem. Problem is, not too good for society because then I'm drinking around the clock 24/7. But I'm thinking, this is going to fix all. So that goes on, and, you know, things started just going downhill. And I don't need to list all of them. And, you know, and again, through the work, I used to think that God was never around for Theron. And today I see it, you know, he was there the whole time. Because, you know, I defied death way too many times. Because, you know, the book also explains to me why I could not tell the truth. If you put a 45 to my mouth, and that happened on a couple of occasions, I was incapable of telling the truth. The book says we can't. There'll come a point in time in our drinking career we can't differentiate the truth from the false. Me, I understood that. And what answer? You know, when I started working in the book, it was not only was I seeing myself on here, but there were so many of these catchphrases that were just reaching out and slapping me. The first one probably being pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization. Man, I could hook up with that. You know, I mean, that brought to mind, as soon as I read that, you know, it brought to mind the most recent example was being hollered at while I was in a blackout. Hey, what are you doing? And I look around, come out of my blackout, and it's the hostess of the place the party is at, and I'm peeing in her indoor ficus plant. Pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization. You know, then I started remembering back the condition I was in when I buried my mother. You know, because I was incapable of knowing how to grieve properly, and because I was in the throes of my addiction, I was trashed. Anything to avoid reality. You know, and then I started thinking about the girl that I lived with, an ex-girlfriend that died of cancer that I couldn't be a part of. Because I was so selfish, self-centered, and couldn't deal with anything being uncomfortable. I remember back on all the friends that I buried and had to make it a party and act like it was because of we were celebrating a life, but they didn't have any life to celebrate. They were just like me. They were just going through this deal, miserable. I remember the missed opportunities of burying relatives that died in the war because I was selfish and self-centered and couldn't deal with grieving. So, I'm going through this stuff and it's getting worse and worse and worser and worser. You know, and I'm always looking for reasons not to believe. Because see, my dad being an alcoholic, and I'm sitting there and I'm hating what he is. And I'm hating alcohol. And I would not, if anybody had called my dad an alcoholic, they were in for a beatdown. So when it came time for me to look at my own stuff, I certainly wasn't going to admit to it. You know, I love AA. It saved my butt. I've got one beef with them, though. I do. One. They print a pamphlet. And I don't know how many questions is it. What is it? 15, Larry, or 12? 20? Well, that's stupid anyway. But anyway, 20 questions. And they're questions to ask yourself if you're an alcoholic. If you're wondering if you're an alcoholic. You know. Questions like, do you drink alone? Do you drink in the morning? Bing, 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 bing. Man, you know, I remember coming out of jail at 16 on the third, fourth, fifth time, whatever it was. I think I have a faint recollection of being handed a pamphlet back then. And I'm a loophole guy. I'm going to find one question, if not one, a piece of one, that doesn't apply to me, so I can say, see? Not me. Shut up. And every time I'd come out of jail, I would tell people, they'd say, and I mean, at 16, they were going, dude, you might have, you know. I mean, my party buddies were going, dude, you know. Really? You might want to look at this. And I'm going, man, I just did 14 days. Alcoholic can't go that long without drinking. That's what I thought. So I start, you know, I go through that, and you know, it was just it got to the point to where, you know, I was raising my standards on a bottom constantly, you know, that pitiful and comprehensible demoralization. And you know, all those questions, whether I'm an alcoholic or not, the book also takes away my loophole on that. And we agnostics, it says all we've got to do is ask ourselves two. One, if when you honestly want to, you can't quit entirely. Or two, if when drinking, you have little or no control of the amount you take. No loophole in that for me. Because there had been hundreds of times I honestly wanted to quit and couldn't. And every time I drank, I had a little, or let's just say, no control over how much I drank. So this went on for years, you know, and I'm still, you know, I got the girl, I got married, I couldn't work for anybody, so I had to start my own business. And then for the next 25 years, I had the worst boss in the world. You know, I lose her, lose the company, and that had been the closest thing to me developing an identity for myself. The closest I'd come. And now they're gone. So then it started really going downhill. You know, and I swore that I'd never love again, so she couldn't break my heart again. But I know I'll never put all the blood, sweat, and tears in the company, just have it taken away from me again. And so, you know, I kept having to work harder and harder to find people like me, that drank like me, that used like me. And, you know, I got to the point to where, you know, I had a chose this girl. And up to that point, I'd had a big regret about never having kids. So I found a real, real sick one, real sick girl like me. And she happened to have a son. And I said, perfect. He needs a dad. I need a son. I don't know much about her, but she may cause a problem, but, you know. So anyway, you know, the book also explains to me the craziness that I did so often. And it says, you know, our best intentions go awry. Man, that explained a lot to me. Because, you know, I was a good person. And I wanted desperately to help people. Desperately. But I was incapable of following through with it. So I'm trying to help this kid, you know, and all I was doing was just giving him stuff. And, you know, he started getting older, and I'm putting him up in an apartment and giving his friends apartments and stuff. And, you know, I ended up doing something that I swore I'd never, ever do. You know, I'm already a thief by now. I'm already a liar and all. But, you know, my morals or the standards that I'd been given as a kid, they were just all going away one at a time. And so even though I had the best intentions to help this kid, you know, I ended up doing something that I thought was lower than life itself. And I ended up using with him. And so it got to the point to, you know, he turned 18. I'd already buried a friend of his who was living in the apartment that I had for him. I'd gone over there one morning and he didn't wake up they'd gotten in a little fight. Kid had a brain clot and he died, so I had to bury him. And shortly thereafter, Michael, I got a call where he and his best friend died in a car wreck, so I had to bury two more. You know, and again, here's another instance to where it's just something else for me to stuff, for me to drink down, for me to stuff. And, you know, and then later on, I'm in Charleston, and I get a call that my mom has had a stroke. My dad's not going to put her in a nursing home. I'm in Charleston. I've already it messed up my business deal there. I'm hanging on by a thread. And basically, I ain't got a pot to piss in. And I'm like 40 years old. I get the call, and I said, well, I'll come back and help Dad with my mother. And I'd get all these accolades from family and friends and stuff going, he's such a good son. That's so noble of you. And I would just eat it up. And the truth of the matter was, I'm a 40-year-old that ain't got a pot to piss in, and I'm going back home to live. But I had the best of intentions to help my dad. So I get back, and rather than help, I'm a hindrance. Because I'm supposed to relieve him so he can get some sleep, and I'm supposed to work the other shift. And as soon as he lays down and I put my mom to bed, I'm out running the roads. And I'm stealing from them. I'm stealing from my old parents that are on limited income. You know, I started with taking cash. And when they'd either start hiding it from me or run out of it, I even go into the checkbook. You know, and every time I went in there, the wallet or the checkbook, I'm sitting there saying, I'm going to pay this back. I'm going to slip it back in, maybe with some extra. I'm going to take this check and I'm going to take a deposit slip with it. You know, I know I'm going to get caught, but the money's already going to be back in there. I mean it. That deposit slip never got used. And that went on and on and on. And again, thank God God was working for me when I was not even acknowledging Him. Because, you know, our family never did. We weren't ones to ever say, I love you. Those words weren't ever spoken. It's not to say that caused me any grief or big emotional upheaval. It's just the way it was. It was understood. It just wasn't spoken. And, you know, I'm already starting to get overwhelmed with all this guilt, you know. The dope and all is not getting rid of it like it used to. So thank God He gave me the opportunity to be there when I put my mom to bed and was able to say, I love you. She said it back, and I heard her take her last breath that night. 3 months later, my father got very ill. He started going downhill fast. I think he willed himself to death. And he was a tough guy, and he never did say it either. But God worked in my life. And I was able to say I love you to Him. He said it back, and I heard Him draw His last breath. So, anyway, these are the discoveries I make through these steps. And again, to have all those questions answered and to finally have good intentions that don't go awry today is just amazing. You know, to be hooked up, for me to find a God of my understanding. And you know, after I piggybacked on Sky Chief for a while, I got a little sobriety, and then I figured out what God's name was, because I was still hung up on this name deal. And I told the guys in the group, I said, you know what? I figured out God's name. And they said, you've been drinking? I said, no. Y'all say it at every meeting. They said, you sure you haven't been drinking? I said, yeah. Y'all say it after every meeting. I said, you circle up, hold hands, and you say your name. And he says, Theron, what are you talking about? I said, Harold's his name. Y'all say it, Harold be thy name after every meeting. So I started using Harold for a while. Because I'm still new. I'm in this infancy deal with coming up with my own conception of a God. And you know, the trick is, you know, as I got involved in this AA and started doing service work and peeking my ears up and all, and you know, and I come out of my pink cloud after about a year, and then I started really being conscious of, or getting scared, little fearful of all these people that had all this time, and they were I became aware that they were dropping out, and I didn't want that for me. And I used to say, "What happened? What happened?" You know, everybody was saying the same thing. I quit calling my sponsor. I quit going to meetings. You know. What I believe today is that 11th step says we start through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God. For me, it's all about that seeking. Continuing to seek. You know, as soon as I quit seeking, I'm going to start missing meetings, quit calling my sponsor, quit doing service work, you know, and then I'm going to be gone. So it's through that seeking, you know, and if any of y'all are having a problem with that, you know, I tell people today is not the same God I prayed to when I first got sober. And if I continue to keep seeking, like I have been, the God I prayed to this morning isn't going to be the same God I prayed to next week. Because through this seeking, you know, early on, turn my will and my life over to a higher power. Even though he wasn't named yet, but we weren't on a personal basis yet. But I was here. He was here. Then he became Sky Chief. He was a little bit more. And then he became Herald. And then through seeking, my life expanded. My outlook expanded. The way I view things expanded. My God consciousness expanded. And if he's all powerful, then he's right here. As I grow, he grows. I grow, he grows. So I can't, if as long as I'm seeking and growing, then I'm never going to be the same God. We're going to have a whole new relationship if I can continue to seek and do things right. You know, the biggest benefit, and for me to continue to see the truth, is through my work with others. That's been such a huge gift. And if anybody has had a spiritual awakening and hasn't worked with somebody else, you are shortchanging yourself terribly. Because that's where the juice is. And, you know, if that's what keeps me in check. That's what makes this useless person with no self-esteem makes my life worthwhile, you know, and fulfilling. If you come in with low self-esteem, how you get that back? Do esteemable acts. You know, I learned how to become a giver instead of a taker. I've been a taker all my life. I didn't do anything but suck up y'all's air, you know. And I used to always wonder what my purpose was. What's my purpose? I thought it had to be such a grandiose thing. I had to feed the third world nation or I had to build huts in South Africa or something. It's none of that. The book's got an answer for that too. My purpose is the same as anybody's. It's to be of maximum service to God and those around me. Wow. Is that all? Awesome. You know, and that's what I attempt to do today. The 12 steps. This program has given this old coot a new life to where, you know, I feel like a recapped tire. You know, and that's, again, you know, I don't have to have all that shame and regret from all those things that I did for as long as I did. Because God tells me that that uniquely qualifies me to help another suffering alcoholic. And that's an awesome experience. Thank you all for letting me share.
Thank you, Theron. Fantastic. Tisdale's going to hand out the chips and I'm going to pass the baskets the second time. Everybody was very generous last time, but if you miss a basket, we'd appreciate if you can afford a little. We're trying to collect money on the second passing for an upgraded sound system. We should be making improvements soon.
My name is Tinsley. I'm an alcoholic. And thanks, Theron. That was great. Just great. Here at this meeting, we have a chip system to mark our time away from our last drink. If you want to try this way of life one day at a time, we offer a white chip. Would anybody like to pick up a white chip? After 30 days, we have a silver chip. Anybody else got 30 days? All right. Anybody else got 30 days? How about 3 months? Yellow chip for 6 months? How about a green chip for 9 months? Anybody got a birthday? All right.
Sorry, I'm an alcoholic. I did it by practicing the serenity prayer, not saying the serenity prayer, and by coming back, because if I don't come back, it's not going to work. If I keep coming back, it works.
Anybody else got a birthday?
This is 26.
Who are you?
Oh, my name is Owen Jones, and I'm a grateful
alcoholic.
And I know we're out of time, but I don't know. I just, when I came in here, I just fell in love with AA. And I still don't like people all that much. And I'm working on it. And I fell in love with the idea of being an alcoholic. As Darren was explaining his life story, it was the first time that it became clear to me and explained to me what the nature of my problem was. And so, today I'm very grateful to be an alcoholic, not only because of that, but because it gives me, an opportunity to be an AA member and introduce me to a life that's really second to me. And something called design for living, and without that, particularly alcohol, I'm not so totally so I owe this to God and all of you.
Any other birthdays? Anybody want to reconsider on the white chip? Big hand for the chips you hold.
Okay, tomorrow night, Mike Dunn is... Raise your hand, Mike. He's signing the sheets. He really helps us out a lot, and he's also very active in the newcomers meeting that meets in the same room at 8 o'clock tomorrow night. I got a word or two to share with us, Mike? All right. This room, you got a lot of seats, so come on back. It's a great place to be. Even if you got a little time, newcomer meeting is a great way to show how all this works. Any AA or NAVA Club related announcements? Yes, okay.
I'm Brother, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey,
Thursday and Saturday nights at 8 o'clock in Buckhead, there's an entire ready group that meets to come to Presbyterian Church. Thursdays and stuff, Saturdays open discussions. This Thursday we're going to be on the fourth step. Any directions there, it's in the, on the online meeting schedule. And you can see me. So Thursdays and Saturdays at 8.
And the Boy Scout hut behind the Presbyterian Church?
Yep.
Yes. Okay, next week, Helen Rowe of the East Cobb group. Also, it's been about 4 years since she told her story here, and she's helping us out next week, filling in for somebody who dropped out. And so we're really looking forward to having Helen. And then Mark Jay is coming down from Gainesville the week after, and I love him like a sponsor. He's a great man. So we got lots of good things going on here on Monday night, 8 o'clock, next couple of weeks. After that, we've got a July 4th cookout coming, too, that will be not Monday night, but July 4th, I think it's a Wednesday. So come for the fellowship right after the... It will be on the 4th, yes. Okay. Guess what? We're out of time. We've been out of time. If there's no further announcements, I remind you that anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. For those who will, please join hands in the Lord's Prayer.
Well, my head was in tomorrow, and my feet followed history. I had an insane notion I could hoodoo everything around me. No. 'Cause too much of everything ain't enough for nothing to me. I got a nudge from the judge, thought it put me in recovery. But the plug in the jug